What's up, y'all? My name is Alan Sheriff, aka Alan the Sheriff of all things innovative, and this is the ATS Podcast. Here on the ATS Podcast, we talk about all things science, technology, and psychology related, and it's my hope that are making the world a better place, one new episode at a time. Quick updates, make sure to go to alanthesheriff.com and check out some of my Apex merch. Remember, help me help you make the world a better place. Let's get into it. So the first subject is science. Now, I read an article from nextweb.com. And it talks about the unveiling of the James Webb Space Telescope this year and our strong chance of encountering an alien civilization. Now, what sucks is that we'll be able to see habitable planets from light years away with this telescope, but we'll never be able to visit them. I just want to point that out. That extraordinarily sucks. Like, it's like being in a museum with God. You know, the universe is the museum. You know, and we're Earth. And like every single time we reach out, we're like, oh, Pluto. And God just goes, don't touch. Like, so it sucks. But anyway, the article points out that it's 100 times more powerful than the Hubble telescope, and it uses infrared scanning technology to see things further away and with greater detail. It'll scan thousands of potentially habitable worlds for signs of life, something Hubble wasn't designed to do. And if everything goes according to plan, it'll reach its destination, calibrate its sensors, and be fully operational by May 2022. Now, this article offers a lot of commentary from Michio Kaku, and it talks about how he feels like discovering a new alien civilization will be great, but at the same time, it's probably in our best interest not to contact them because very bad things will happen. You know, as time has shown again and again, at least on our planet, it's a very difficult type of exchange when it comes to civilizations encountering other civilizations, and some tend to just take over the other. But for me, it's like a distress signal. I feel like there's nothing wrong with contact. And this is me just offering my own opinion. Again, I'm not a physicist or, you know, I don't really have extensive knowledge on all this stuff. But I feel like, dude, we're in dire straits right now with climate change and how difficult it's been for us to, you know, be able to get along with one another. And I'm usually very optimistic. But I think that reaching out to these alien civilizations is like a distress signal. I don't see any real harm in doing it. Like, of course, there's a chance that they'll just destroy us. But there's also a chance that they could save us. You know, I think of an alien civilization encountering us would be like a similar situation to, it would be similar to the ending of Lord of the Flies, you know, where the lost boys get discovered. And there's that one kid just like lying out on the ground and the soldier just steps in front of him and he's like, what are all of you doing out here? Like, like I feel like we're like the lost boys in that situation. We're just going like, help me. We haven't seen the light in generations. Like, please help us. But no, like I think, look, man, at this point, I feel like it's definitely worth it. And look, man, like at this point, if the civilization is as advanced as it is, maybe they could teach us, you know, about how to be more orderly, more organized. I don't know. We'll just have to see what happens. But it's very interesting to see what's going to be going on with this telescope. I can't wait for us to be able to find our first alien civilization. The next subject is technology. Now, I read an article from Futurism, and it talks about an exoskeleton manufacturing company by the name of SuitX betting on its technology going mainstream in the near future, meaning the more prices drop, the sooner you'll see exoskeletons being sold at outlets like Home Depot. Imagine that. Now, in this context, an exoskeleton is a machine-like outer layer made to protect or support the human body, but obviously, in this case, most of the exoskeletons will be a lot smaller and easier to manage to handle mundane tasks. So I don't want people thinking about the exoskeletons from Elysium, you know, or District 9. All right, we're not there yet. Well, maybe we are, but the exoskeletons that you see in those movies, they won't be available in outlets. Or will they? I don't know. I think that'd be really awesome. Anyway, in the article, it talks about how the founder, Homayoun Kazerouni, suggested that exoskeletons could make simple activities like climbing or hiking easier. These exoskeletons can average around $45,000, and SuitX's suits are already being tested at car makers General Motors and Fiat, mostly to prevent muscle fatigue and get more productivity out of human workers. Now, hear me out. I think that these exoskeletons could make it a lot easier for these employees to lead happier and more productive lives. In fact, I think it probably will even be mandated federally mandated in the future for companies like these to provide their employees with these exoskeleton suits. Because, well, I think that if you see some employees buying these exoskeleton suits at Home Depot just to make their lives a lot easier, and you'll have employees working at the same company who see this, and, you know, they'll probably get upset that they're probably not as, you know, productive, or just don't have, life doesn't come easier for them, because obviously all this heavy lifting, you know, all this hard labor comes at a cost of your body. You know, it could have an ill impact on your back, you know, and overall it could have horrible repercussions, longstanding with regards to your body. And so I think that it'll be really important for companies like this to be able to allow their employees all to have the same chance in the work environment. And this is just all about improving the standard and the quality of life for human beings in general. Like, I don't think anybody wants to, you know, engage in a heavy lifting job, you know, unless you're a bodybuilder or something and you enjoy this stuff. I mean, I don't know. Like, I love lifting. I don't care what anybody says. Like, I don't know about all that. I mean, if there are people out there that actually exist, then, you know, great. But I think these exoskeletons should probably be federally mandated at some point, make, you know, lives a lot easier for these employees at these companies. I think it'd be great for the company itself, because it will increase productivity and it'll make, you know, work a lot easier for these employees. And also keep on the lookout for anti-robot, keep on the lookout for anti-exoskeleton unions that these robots will probably form, because humans have a better chance of combating them in the work environment. Now, like, we do not compute. We don't want these humans having exoskeletons. That makes our job a lot more difficult. Like, just watch. Protesting robots, that'll be a sight to see. The last subject is psychology, and I read an article from Science Daily, and it talks about new research from the University of British Columbia that offers some insight into communicating the importance of climate change by examining biases and offering communication tools. Now, obviously, two groups that were brought to the forefront of this research were liberals and conservatives. I thought it was very interesting. Obviously, politics is a very annoying space. it can be annoying, you know, but I'm just saying, like, obviously the two groups that come into your head when you think about, you know, trying to communicate climate change and knowing how to communicate it has a lot to do with the dynamic of these two political groups, and they're very polarizing. So this article discusses how people with different political orientations show different attentional priorities to climate change information, and that misperceptions of norms within a group can be a barrier to bipartisan climate policy making in the U.S. So here are some of the communication tools that the authors suggest. Communication of climate change should align with the target group's ideologies and values. So for instance, if you want to convince someone that climate change is a real issue, you have to be able to use this technique to be able to convince them that climate change will be beneficial to them. So for instance, if you're talking to someone who doesn't believe in climate change, but they believe in the economy, you can say, well, climate change will benefit the economy because it'll help create more jobs, because there will be more technologies and people will have to be able to develop out these technologies, creating more jobs in the process. Or you can point out the negative consequences to one's family of climate change. This one's really easy. Just say climate change affects everybody. Your family's gonna die if you don't do anything about it. Your family's gonna die! Obviously, don't communicate it like that, but that's another effective communication tool. And you can also provide accurate information on social norms for both in-groups and out-groups. Just provide accurate information. That's one of the last communication tools. Just provide accurate information that combats the disinformation that they've been hearing. But my concern is about how much all of this will actually translate into personal action. I'm not gonna lie. I think that sometimes I try to determine whether or not me communicating with someone, I will reap more benefits from that and having them on my side, as opposed to actually going out and doing something about the issue like climate change. Like, oh, will me talking to this person make the process a lot easier when they decide to come on my side, and I will reap more benefits? We will all reap more benefits from it in the future? Or should I just go out and just protest and just try to help the putting forth of legislation to combat climate change? You know what I mean? But that's one of the things that the study says it's going to continue to focus on, because personal action is also a very important thing. But also, when it comes to disinformation out there, you got to be extremely careful, because when it comes to using these communication tools, I hate the fact that even if I did use these communication tools, some people will bring in disinformation such as, oh, well, you know, why should we worry about climate change? The earth has been, you know, screwing itself up for years. Or, oh, you know, space weather has an impact on Earth's climate and all this stuff. And I'm just looking at it like, you know, I think I'm just going to go back to protesting. But nah, yeah. Last few points. Look, get out there, Apexes. Use these communication tools. And if you have a hard time discussing, trying to convince someone that climate change is real and that we should do something about it, just you look at the TikTok that I provided in the description. I think you'll find it funny and educational. But thanks so much for tuning into this podcast episode, guys. I really appreciate it. If you really like this podcast episode and you're watching this on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, and hit that bell for notifications. And if you're watching this on any of my podcast hosting sites, make sure you either hit that follow or subscribe button. Thanks so much for tuning in. I appreciate it. And I will see you on the next episode of the ATS Podcast.